Hi everyone, welcome to the Raw Rundown. It's the Raw Rundown. That is the name of the show where we, what is it we do here, David?
We react to Monday Night Raw and then we run down the events that transpired there.
That's what we do. I'm Kenny McIntosh. I'm joined as always by my American compadre, David J. for Jeff Jarrett McCutcheon.
I don't think that's accurate. But hi, everybody! It's me. It's the ZOOPSOUL. I even had the double letter. That's where you can get me on Twitter, everybody. How's it going? It's great to talk to you guys. I wish Robert were here. I invited Robert. It may have been off-putting with all the whipped cream and strawberries that he saw in my shopping bag. I think that may have been the thing to keep Robert away this week. But regardless, I'm here. Kenny's here. We're going to run down the events that transpired on Monday Night Raw.
So now that David has got his chance to get up Robert's arse before the beginning, we can quickly move on with the proceedings of the show. So we're going to run down Raw. Obviously, it was the July 4th edition, Independence Day, America Day, where, you know, it's all about food fights and Americana and patriotism and, oh God, it's so much shit. I mean, I really like America, but Jesus Christ, I mean, it's so, like, self-serving. It's so...
Pokey.
Oh, it's horrible.
It is.
But we will get to all of that. But before we do, I think that Sandra and Robert had a chance to discuss a little bit Brock Lesnar and get into UFC 200 this Saturday night against Mark Hunt. And Sandra and Robert, I think they were discussing the video game cover where Brock was on, and they both had the opinion that if Mark Hunt were to beat Brock Lesnar, that it wouldn't really affect Brock Lesnar in WWE. So David and I are here to present the other side of that coin. So this Saturday it's going to be Mark Hunt, Brock Lesnar, UFC 200. Brock Lesnar is 38 years old. He's not fought in the octagon for the better part of 6 years. And Mark Hunt is 42, so Mark Hunt is older than him. But Mark Hunt as a fighter, you know, he's not stopped. He still trains and all that sort of stuff. I'm not going to pretend I know any more about MMA than that. That's as far as I go. David, so Brock Lesnar comes back to WWE in 2012. He has a kind of rocky first year where he is given Triple H as an opponent for...
Oh, boy.
Forever.
It's amazing that he didn't die off after that, because that was a death sentence.
You mean it wasn't the perfect storm?
Oh, man. I was there live for one of those matches, you know.
Oh, the Extreme Rules one.
Yeah, I believe Brock won. Yeah, I was going to say it was the good one out of the lot of them. And, it was quite enjoyable, but that's due to how physical Brock was in that match, naturally.
Well, you know, I am going into WrestleMania 29, which for whatever reason is one of my least favorite WrestleManias of all time. I hate it with a fiery passion. And I was there, so it's not that I was in a huff because I wasn't in America that year, but I really hate that show. Undertaker Punk is the only thing that saves it for me, but leading up to that show, the thing I was looking forward to the most was Triple H and Brock Lesnar, actually. Because the build to that match was incredible. You know, you had Vince McMahon was about to fire Paul Heyman, Brock returned an F5 Vince, Triple H returned, they had all these big physical angles on Raw, Shawn Michaels came back, there was a lot going on, and then the match just wasn't great. But anyway, he has the Triple H series, he even fights CM Punk at SummerSlam, and then at WrestleMania 30, he defeats The Undertaker, ends the streak, and becomes The Conqueror. as Paul Heyman would say so often, and probably will say next week on his live Evening With tour, the Advocate of Extreme with Inside the Ropes. Get the last of the limited tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk, London, Manchester, Glasgow, but I digress. Then he beats John Cena with 16 German suplexes.
Which, to this date, by the way, is the best Brock Lesnar match. I will contend that up and down.
Yeah, I loved it. He wins the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. He has a horribly booked title defense at Night of Champions, which I'll try and forget about for the rest of my life. Then he has an excellent triple threat match with John Cena and Seth Rollins at the Royal Rumble. And then he loses the championship via triple threat rules to Seth Rollins, and then he has a great summer of 2015 feud with The Undertaker. So that's where we are now with Brock Lesnar. He also beats Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania 32. But Brock Lesnar, to this point, has not been pinned by anybody since before the streak ended.
And so, let me add, he has also not even looked that vulnerable.
No. The only time that you can question it is when he technically lost to The Undertaker at SummerSlam, but in reality, he didn't really lose. But apart from that, there's nothing else. So, I think the thing that's interesting is, Robert has always said, and I get where he's coming from, Robert's always said that he's kind of let go the end of the streak and that being attached to Brock Lesnar. You know, he's kind of, that's not a part of the story that he kind of looks for anymore. Whereas for me, that, I still look for that. I still look for who is going to defeat Brock Lesnar in WWE and be able to say that they were the one who beat the one that beat 21-1. So, does it matter to you?
Yes. Not to the extent that it matters to you, but it is, I think that you have to consider it no matter what, because the streak in the history of WrestleMania has been one of the most important factors. And think of all the great matches lately that have come out. Well, not lately. Oh, boy. in the past 10 years that have come out of the streak at WrestleMania, it has become a focal point, or was at least, at WrestleMania. It will go down in history as one of the drawing points. And whenever they ended the streak, as I said, it's the end of the free money train. Because it was always a event at WrestleMania. It was just like the title being defended. And the streak was defended. And Brock Lesnar captured the streak the same way that a champion loses a title to another man. Or a contender climbs up the ladder at WrestleMania and takes that championship that is hoisted above there. It is a title in itself. And it is something that is noteworthy to a lot of wrestling fans. And so, yeah, Brock Lesnar is the holder of the streak. He is undefeated since the streak in terms of getting pinned or submitted. Therefore, he has yet to bestow the streak upon anyone else.
And let me explain why it means as much as I think it probably comes across to it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not someone who loses sleep over it. I'm not someone who's like, oh my God, they ended the streak. But I think that it would be, it's just, you know, you're talking about there being sort of the free money train is left by ending the streak. I think the free money train is leaving if you don't have Brock Lesnar pass that to somebody else. If you don't have Brock Lesnar, you know, lose to somebody who can finally say that this unstoppable monster was stopped, you know?
Yes.
Now, the big sort of question is Roman Reigns. He was obviously designed to be that guy. But in terms of the UFC fight, which has kind of come out of nowhere, so let's say if Brock Lesnar goes in and beats Mark Hunt, I think everything kind of stays the same.
Absolutely. I was going to say, then his stock raises even further.
Yeah, then he's like megastar again. It's kind of like he's been given a boost, an injection of star power again, which he didn't even need, but he would get it.
If I may make a gambling analogy, with Brock Lesnar taking the streak and going on that massive tear that he went on, it's sort of like they bet the house on 13 black or whatever it would be. I'm not a gambler, so you can probably tell this. However, the analogy still rings true. It's like he bet the house. He bet everything in his bank account on being a superstar. And boom, all of a sudden, you are sitting on so much money that you could never possibly spend it, right? Well, going to UFC and gambling this, it's an unnecessary risk. It's like he goes, you know what? I have more money than I know what to do with, but I'm going to bet the house again, double or nothing. And man, oh man, the chances that that is going to fall on your number again, I don't know, because it's kind of looking grim for Brock at UFC 200 against Mark Hunt, who, from what I gather, is a striker. And that is, of course, Brock Lesnar's weakness with his rumored glass jaw. Not my words.
Let me ask you, if Mark Hunt beats Brock Lesnar on Saturday, what does that do to Brock Lesnar returning for SummerSlam?
It damages Brock Lesnar's authenticity. And that's what we love about Brock Lesnar. Why do we love the people that we love? Like, let's just take a look here. The answer is going to be authenticity every time, but let's just take a gamut here. Let's run the gamut on this rogues gallery of wrestlers. Okay, you have Steve Austin. Why did we love Steve Austin? Because he was a beer drinking redneck who had a very short temper and didn't take crap from anybody. That's Steve Austin, right? Why did we love The Rock? Because he had a quick wit and a sharp tongue. And he didn't take crap from anybody. That was The Rock. That was how he came across. That was the way he was presented. Why did we love Mick Foley? Because he seemed like the nicest guy on the planet. And we didn't want to see him take any more of those risks that he put himself under. That was Mick Foley. That's who Mick Foley is. And why do we love Brock Lesnar? Because he is a certified, bona fide ass kicker. That's what he does. And if he goes into UFC 200 and gets his ass kicked, his gimmick takes some damage, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now, I'm with you for the most part. I don't think if Brock Lesnar loses to Mark Hunt that he is just another guy.
But I think No, of course not. But there is a chink in the armor then.
Yeah, there's definitely a chink in the armor. And I think the issue is that the storytelling that you would need to do to get Brock back to the level. Because let's remember, when was Brock Lesnar's last big match in WWE? October 2015, Hell in a Cell. That was the last big match against The Undertaker. His three pay-per-views this year that he has done weren't big matches. The Royal Rumble, where he essentially got chucked out by the Wyatts and just left. The Fastlane main event, which was a very good match. But I think nobody believed that Brock Lesnar wouldn't be able to beat them to get to the main event of WrestleMania.
Right.
And then at WrestleMania, he had a perfectly adequate exhibition match. You know? Like, I don't think the Dean Ambrose match was bad. I just think it was
run of the mill.
Yeah, there was nothing. So what you've got is you've got a Brock Lesnar that is, you know, got charisma oozing out of his pores. He's got an advocate who can talk for anybody. But he's not had anything to kind of sink his teeth into, which, you know, I mean, maybe I've just described why he's going back to UFC. Like, maybe that's...
Yes.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he's just like...
Maybe it's creatively unfulfilling for him in the WWE right now.
Maybe so. And I wouldn't blame him. Now, I think that if he comes back and he's lost, where does he go? What do you do with Brock Lesnar? I mean, the good thing is, he has Paul Heyman. Because Paul Heyman is one of the only people, I think, on promos who could save it.
Yeah, and, the thing about it is Paul Heyman could sit there and he could spin you such a tale that you would believe that the chicken shit is chicken salad, when in fact it is chicken shit. So, I mean, you know, if you're willing to gobble that up, Paul Heyman's just a godsend. There's no other way to put it. And he is the guy that you would want on damage control if there needs be. My thing, though, is that there's no way that you can't say that a loss in UFC doesn't parlay into damaging his WWE career when the reason we love Brock Lesnar in WWE is that he is the UFC ass kicker. So if he's losing in UFC, that does translate to why we love him in WWE. So it's certainly, it's an unnecessary risk and an unnecessary gamble, but I understand why he, the person, wants to do it. I don't think we as wrestling fans should be looking forward to it, though.
I'm torn because I feel like it is a huge fight and I'm intrigued by it, but I am scared of the ramifications for what it means for Brock Lesnar in the environment that I enjoy him in the most.
Yes, and here's the thing. If he wins, I think that it propels him further, but I think the risk of losing far outweighs that. I think a loss to him matters so much more than a win for him. And I don't think it's a risk that is calculated based on logic. I think this is a gut feeling for him, and I feel like it's something that he had to do himself. And if that's what he felt compelled to do, by all means, and no matter what happens, he's still the toughest guy in the WWE. And maybe that is, underneath it all, what it is, you know, what we should be looking forward to. But the simple fact is, though, is that if he does take damage, since he is the toughest guy in the WWE, it kind of lowers the whole roster by comparison, you know?
Yep.
I don't know.
He did do a UFC conference call this past week.
Oh, it was brilliant,
and,
too.
He was asked about... Now, Stephanie McMahon had done some marketing sort of PR call or something, and she was asked about the Brock Lesnar fight, and she was perfectly fine about it, but she did say, you know, we're not really going to promote it, we're allowing Brock to do this fight, and da-da-da-da. You know, there was a little bit of a sort of trying to deflate the buzz of UFC 200 a little bit, and Brock Lesnar was asked about what Stephanie said. And he said, I don't know. I don't care what she says. which, you know, I mean, how can you not love that?
Again, it's that authenticity. That's why we like Brock Lesnar. He is what he says he is.
And he was asked about, you know, how do you feel about how the return to the Octagon would harm your drawing power? He said, I really don't give a shit.
Yeah, and I honestly believe him whenever he says that.
Yeah,
I don't think he cares about the creative. But if I were WWE, before this even happens, I would have had Roman, if that's their guy, and Lesnar booked at any throwaway pay-per-view. The second I heard that he was going to do this, just make it a quick 5-minute match and get out of there, but pass that streak on. I think it's too valuable to lose to a guy who's never been in a wrestling ring.
Yeah, the streak might pass on to Mark Hunt at this stage.
Exactly. In which case, by the way, if I'm Triple H, then I get on the phone with Mark Hunt and go, hey, buddy, have you ever thought about joining professional wrestling?
Just get him in for one match where Triple H pins him. Now it's mine.
I own the streak, Vince.
Okay, so we're going to move on to Monday Night Raw, live from Columbus, Ohio. The heartland of America. I don't know if it is. I just heard Vince used to say that. I thought I'd say it. The heartland of America.
I feel like if Vince is calling something the heartland of America, he thinks that a bunch of stupid people live there.
So I just want to fill you in. Now, did you watch Raw Live, David? Did you watch it?
I watched it on the old DVR, so no. My DVR actually worked this week.
Okay, so you watched it on DVR. I watched it downloaded.
Okay.
Through completely... You know,
completely legal and feasible tactics.
Of course, that's the only way I watch wrestling.
Of course.
Now, it was Tuesday morning as I stick it on, and we are taken backstage to a barbecue of some description where R-Truth and Goldust are singing on a stage, and like basically every wrestler is there apart from the wrestlers who are like main eventers. Like if you want a sort of study as to if WWE see you as a top guy, you were not in this room. That's essentially AJ Styles in the club, they weren't there. John Cena, yeah. Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, nope. Nobody's there. Everybody else, they're there. Dana Boobs is there. Charlotte's not. Sasha's not. The Wyatts are not.
I didn't even think of that. That's brilliant.
But everybody else was there. The vaudevillains interrupt, and to be fair, I mean, I'll be honest, the vaudevillains are not really lighting me on fire on the main roster, but I did kind of like their little interruption, when they were going to try and sing the Declaration of Independence. That was what they were going to do.
Oh, man.
And they were briefly cut off by The Miz. Miz said he wouldn't let this turn into a food fight. It did turn into a food fight. There was food thrown everywhere. Kane and Big Show chokeslammed Heath Slater through the whole thing. But the one gem of the entire segment, and this, I wouldn't describe this whole segment as a gem, but go back and watch it, and there's one point at the very beginning of the food fight, the very beginning, where you see Kevin Owens, and you see him just go under a table and sit down, out of the way. Just not
and he has that bag of Lay's potato chips too.
And then he gets the bag of Lay's potato chips. A man after my own heart that just thinks, I'm just going to sit here and eat some potato chips, let these guys do this. And everybody does the food fight, and then Owens finally climbs out, and then somebody from behind the camera threw a pie in his face. We never found out who that was, but somebody did. And Owens threw a bit of a fit, and that was the end of the segment. So, David, you're an American. Was this segment, did this do Independence Day justice?
It needed more of, Matt and Jeff Hardy shooting fireworks at each other, but other than that, no, it was, it did it justice. It properly, took a look under a microscope at how much food we waste, lovingly, and, I mean, hell, we had a hot dog eating competition where a man ate 70 hot dogs the other day, so, I mean, you know, show that to a starving kid in Africa.
I always remember that scene, and this is me showing my really shit film taste. You know, Robert's got all these like noir films, and I'm just like, has anybody seen Beethoven 2? And there's a bit in Beethoven 2 where they're like away in like a little small town, and the dad does a burger eating contest, and he eats like 3. And then like something happens where he ends up having to eat more, and he eats like 20, and he just throws up, which, you know, as a child from Scotland, that was my vision of America.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that honestly, it's not that far off. I mean, that's just an average meal for me. The thing that I love that you
make out like you're really obese. Like you, oh, make, yeah, it, yeah. You make out like you're like this. You make out like you're Yokozuna. Do you know what I mean? Like
I did eat 15 chicken wings last night for dinner. So I mean,
did you have any fries with that?
I did have fries.
Good.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
If you're going to be bad, do it properly.
No, exactly. And so, yeah. No doubt about it. I'm like, all right, it's July 4th. I'm going to eat 15 chicken wings and cheese fries. Not even just normal fries. Cheese fries. It's like that salt liquid shit that they just drip all over everything. Yeah, no.
What was your story about cheese sauce?
It doesn't involve your penis, right?
No, but it's close.
Okay. Okay, we're good then.
Years ago, I decided to go to New York City for the first time, and I was very excited about it, and I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing, and we decided to go to the Statue of Liberty, and you get this little boat out there, and like they sell snacks on the boat.
Sure.
And they sell hot dogs. I was like, oh, great. And then they were like, the guy's about to give me the hot dog, and then he says, excuse me, sir, would you like some cheese on that? And I'm thinking, this is going to be some grated cheese. But no, it's liquidized nacho cheese sauce.
Yeah. It's just nacho cheese.
So I have it, and I'm like, great. And then I go, fuck it, I'm going to have another one. So I have a second. And then we get back to the city, and we're all good. Now, we had bought tickets that night. It was 3 of us. We bought tickets, because we're rock and roll. to see Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, right? Because it was closing down, and we were like, yeah, we're going to go see this. And something that I've not shared with you listeners that is now going to come into this story, I have irritable bowel syndrome, ladies and gentlemen, which is always controlled, and it's never a problem. On this day, it was a problem. I went to the toilet at 6:45, and at 7:21, my friends finally had to leave without me and go to Beauty and the Beast, and I was still on the toilet at 9:45 when they returned. So if you ever get on that fucking boat, don't take that liquidized cheese shit. It's not good for you. It will ruin your insides.
So could you feel your legs afterwards, or did they have to amputate them?
I'm not Kamala just yet, so we're okay. So yeah, that's a little side story just for you Raw Rundown listeners, and I immediately regret saying that.
Something that I did love about this food fight, by the way, Cesaro and Apollo Crews were having an arm wrestling competition the entire time. Yeah. Like, they didn't even care that they were getting pummeled with hot dogs and whatever the hell else was there, so they did not care. Yeah.
Obviously, last night, you were trying to talk me off a ledge because everybody was telling me, everybody on Twitter, you were all tweeting me saying, you know Rusev's going to lose the title, right? He's going to lose it on America Day to Virgil. No, he was dressed like Virgil.
It was supposed to be Rocky, I think.
But he looked like Virgil. Virgil wore red.
That's racist, and white. Kenny. Come on now.
Virgil wore red and white stripes. He was wearing red and white stripes. Like, I don't know how that can be racist. That's like if I walked in. It's like if I walked in with like a suit jacket on, jeans, dark jeans, and Air Jordans and stuff, doing a shuffle. You'd be like, oh, there's Shane. You know, it's
Son and I just go, that's a lame white motherfucker.
That's Shane.
Too good.
So Rusev faces Titus O. Virgil, and in the end, Rusev beats him again, and rubs it in the face of America. I was waiting for someone to come out and take the title from him in some sort of impromptu contest, but it didn't happen, so I get to enjoy it for a little bit longer. How did you feel about this opening match on America Day Raw?
I thought it was kind of refreshing. I thought the ending was going to be telegraphed for a Titus win. But no, I thought it was refreshing. A rough end for Titus O'Neil, though. He can't go anywhere up from here, right? I mean, that's got to be it.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, apparently they're still doing matches on the house shows, but I can't see this.
No, I mean for his career.
Oh, yeah.
I think his career is done from here. I mean, you know, you don't tap out on America Day to the foreigner, you know, and then go very far from that. So, yeah, no, rough end for Titus. I like Titus, and I was kind of sad to see him lose quite like this. I thought him passing out would have been a better call for this than tapping out, but I know you had to been absolutely elated.
All joking aside, I don't have a problem with Titus O'Neil. I genuinely don't. I thought that it was a shame that he was treated so badly for his joke in February.
Absolutely. I think that anyone who is sensible with a brain would agree with that.
But I do think that Rusev is someone who last year came out of WrestleMania on a tank with Bridget Nielsen and was one of the best acts in the company. And last summer they tried something, it didn't work, and he suffered as a result. And they are now in a rebuilding phase with him, and I think it's going very, very well. And I just want to see that continue, because I think that he is, you know, I remember when he first started that Robert and I were talking, and Robert was like, you know, give it this amount of time and he'll be a comedy character and all that. And he was right. But now he seems to be reverting back to the good Rusev, and that's what I'm really excited about. And I think this guy has main event potential, and I hope that that continues to go that way.
I feel like in the WWE, though, there is a short window for you to get to that main event spot. And for Rusev with him dilly-dallying, I think that now is the time to strike while the iron's hot with him.
Especially with two brands as well coming up.
Right, right, exactly. Like I feel like Cesaro is on the very end of that rope. Like, if he doesn't hit the main event in the next 6 months, I think he never will. So it's definitely a tricky situation.
Is Dolph Ziggler still on that rope?
You should see the eye roll I just did. I hope that was audible.
Of course it was. We could all tell that you died.
Dolph Ziggler, we'll get into him later.
you mean the Poundland Shawn Michaels, legitimately?
Oh, literally. Oh my god, I'm so happy that you said that. I was like,
did you just go on eBay and type in two dudes with attitude worn? Like, what?
Oh my fucking god, he's a Shawn Michaels cosplayer. I'm just gonna air it out now. He just cosplays, he goes to fucking Comic-Con dressed as Shawn Michaels. He's like, look, I'm the Heartbreak Kid. And he carries around a mirror and he hires a prostitute to dress like Sherry Martel. I'm sorry. That guy is a fucking Shawn Michaels cosplayer at best now. And that sucks because he was the best worker in the company a few years back. And we'll get more into it later though. Yeah. I'll save more of a tangent for that. I do want to give a shout out, by the way. My wife yesterday, speaking of Rusev and Lana, my wife yesterday goes, you know, for Halloween, we should dress up as Rusev and Lana. And I'm thinking, yeah, I got the hairy chest. I got the tits. I'm looking good here. I could pull off a Rusev. Rusev Mashka, man. I'm ready.
The hairy chest and the tits.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. I can do that. I can do a broken accent. I'm funny. I could do Rusev. And she just goes, one thing, though. I want to be Rusev. You get to be Lana. And then I was thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, I could do that. I got gorgeous legs. I got big tits. I can rock this. I think I could do Lana. This would be good. And I tweeted it out, and Lana retweeted it and liked it, which, of course,
did
is
she?
Just one. Yeah, she did. Amazing. Yeah. No doubt. That thing's lit up now. I got hundreds of views and interactions and everything from that. Hugely over, though. But more importantly, one of the listeners for the Raw Rundown, where we react to Raw and run down the events of Monday Night Raw, at Darling Whatever, AJ, created my new profile picture on Twitter, which is me as Lana. And you've got to see it if you haven't.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are struggling to know what that is, it is also the photograph on your phone when you download this podcast.
There you go. So huge shout out to at Darling Whatever. Thank you so much, AJ. Made my day. I was struggling with a printer to get my documents printed for my upcoming all-inclusive vacation to Cancun, Mexico.
For fuck's sake.
And it wouldn't even print. And I'm like, oh my god, white people problems, you guys. I can't even do this. In 48 hours, I'm going to be sipping on free margaritas all day, just from the time I wake up until the time I die, basically. And I was just having a horrible day, and then she just picked me up with that picture of me as Lana. And I hope Lana gets to see it, because she needs to see what a monster I would be if I became her for Halloween, which is probably happening now. Let's be honest. It's probably happening. But I digress.
Is Val going to go just like tits out as Rusev then?
Maybe put on some like nipple covers and then just like glue some dog hair or something all over her chest. I don't know. This could happen. This could happen. At Zoop Soul, ZOOPSOUL. You can check that out.
So we're not going to go through everything in this show because some of it was just pointless. So Enzo and Cass won a squash match. The thing we want to talk about with them comes later. There's nothing really to say.
I will say this about this whole exchange. I have some things written, Kenny.
Okay.
Don't you speak for me, sir. The we're stars, we take media showers. That's a golden line. I love that line from Enzo. Enzo was on point here. Very good. Bob Backlund, by the way, would be very proud of Enzo. Bob Backlund only signs autographs if you can name every U.S. president in chronological order. That's a true story, by the way. Just another reason why Bob Backlund is amazing and terrifying at the same time. And lastly about this, Vince had to be back there going, Where's Damian Sandow? Get him to dress up as Benjamin Franklin. Oh, he let him go? Get Curtis Axel.
Poor Damian.
Poor Damian. Well, we say poor Damian, but now he's doing things where he's not dressing up as Benjamin Franklin, so. Who really won that split?
You never know what's going to happen when he turns up at World Culture Pro Wrestling.
It's true. He's a mainstay.
So then we had a segment which was surprisingly... it was maybe my favorite part of the night, to be honest. Charlotte and Dana Brooke come out. They have a kind of little back and forth where they're kind of chatting away. Sasha Banks comes out. Sasha Banks, to me, does the promo of her career so far.
Yeah, easily.
Where she talks about why she is a real boss after Charlotte tried to make it that she was the boss. It ended up that Dana went to go after Sasha. Sasha ducked. Charlotte ended up booting Sasha in the face. And as Charlotte went to try and take Sasha down, Sasha ended up applying the bank statement. And Dana pulled Charlotte out of the way. And this whole thing just made me excited for Sasha and Charlotte. Like, it feels like a big match. It feels like, you know, the best way I can describe it is when Shawn Michaels was the IC champ, and he would be able to beat certain people, but then when he was finally put up against like a Razor Ramon or whatever, there's no escape. And yeah. For Charlotte, there's no escape from Sasha. She has never been able to beat her. This is the match. So I would prefer if this was kept to SummerSlam rather than Battleground, but you know, I'm not gonna nitpick.
Let's be honest, they're probably going to have some screwy finish with Dana Brooke at Battleground, and that'll lead to SummerSlam.
I'm okay with that if that's what you do, and then maybe SummerSlam you ban Dana from ringside and then it has to be, you know, the one on one thing. But that's fine.
Yeah.
What did you think of this?
Sasha's money. You can bank on it. And the thing is too, is I'm not even a Sasha Banks, like, I'm not huge into her. She's one of those people to where everybody, you know, everybody loses their mind over Sasha Banks. And I'm just like, yeah, but there's other great women in that division right now. But she sold me. She sold me. This was a hard sell and she drove a hard bargain. I couldn't say no to it. I love the segment. Sasha's over with me now, you guys.
Do you know what's funny though is you mentioned those other great women, right? Which there are, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But what does Sasha have that I would argue every other woman except Charlotte, Becky, and Bayley don't have? And that is authenticity. Sasha is authentic. You buy the character that she is portraying.
Yes. And honestly, I didn't until this promo. And then I was like, that is real. That is real. That's still real to me, damn it.
There wasn't a reason for you to buy it, though. Because on the main roster, Sasha has not been given the microphone and been able to argue her case, you know? Exactly.
And I loved how aggressive the promo was. It was delivered very well, very punctual, right on cue. It was just really good. And I like the idea. She seemed fearless, didn't she?
Yeah, do you know the thing about it, that it was when Sasha got the mic and she did, this doesn't strike me a lot when I watch wrestling, but it did in this segment. She was saying, you know, to be a legit boss, you have to be this and this and this and this and this. It was a lot of stuff that she said.
Yeah.
But each line that she did, the next one was even more impactful. The next one was even more intense.
And a lot of it had to do with her delivery, too.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was going to say. Major props to her, because to deliver all that content the way she did and as well as she did, I was kind of surprised at how good it was. And I thought she nailed it. Really nailed it.
Yeah, it took me aback. I definitely put her on my to-watch list. So, yeah, kudos. It was great.
Then we got, you know, this is a special show, David. It's July 4th, so what do we need to have in a July 4th episode? You know, what about champion versus champion?
Ooh, that Dean sounds Ambrose. Good. I like that.
Dean Ambrose, the WWE champion against The Miz. This went about 10 minutes. Finally, Dean Ambrose defeated The Miz. I've said on this podcast a lot that I'm a big Miz fan of where he is positioned, but I didn't really want to see it have to take 10 minutes for the WWE champion to beat him.
And beyond that, it was kind of a stinker, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, I was watching it just kind of going, Dean Ambrose really should be, because the whole thing about The Miz is he's a chicken shit heel. That's the gimmick.
Yeah.
That's what we love about it. We don't want him to be, you know, a technical wrestler, you know? That's not what you sign up for with Miz.
Yeah, for The Miz, it's like the chase of him losing that title. That's the allure to The Miz. It's nothing between the ropes. It's all on the mic and it's all in the character, which is great. That's fine. Hey, you know, that's perfectly suitable to build a career on. But yeah, I think that his weaknesses really shine whenever he's not in there with a great technical wrestler. So, yeah, I don't know. You know what was pretty great, though? Seth Rollins.
Oh, so good.
He's winning that title.
I hope so.
No. Mark it right now. He's winning that title at the pay-per-view.
He deserves it. I loved when he was standing saying to the fans, you know, he's a letdown. You know, he's an embarrassment. He's supposed to be your role model and all this sort of stuff. It was just great, you know, because he's
right. No. I was gonna say the key to this one, the key word, the theme is authenticity. And, it's true. What he had to say, it was true. He wasn't lying to anybody, you know? The best heels are right. And he absolutely sang the truth here. It was phenomenal. I loved it. Oh God, he's just so good.
Yeah, and Ambrose left it just long enough, and I liked the dirty deeds on the table, because unlike the page turner, it is more impactful on a table, because you're actually drilling someone's head into it. You're not just doing a submission move on a comfier surface. then we got a match that Dolph Ziggler had asked for. Dolph Ziggler wanted to steal the show one more time with Seth Rollins before he gets fired. Sorry, before the draft. they had a... I'll be honest, I was expecting better. I'm gonna put it out there. It wasn't bad at all, but I've seen these two have better matches, if I'm honest. Yeah,
and I think that's the issue, is that we've seen these two in the ring before, and we've seen them perform at a great level, and Ziggler, man, he should have, I think out of everything that's happened over the past few years in the WWE, even from Punk walking out and everything else, the thing that needed to change more than anything else is Dolph Ziggler needed to not sign that contract extension and get away for a little bit. He needed to pull a Cody Rhodes. He needed to get a breath of fresh air and come back stronger to where people actually want to see him again. Because right now he has go-away heat, and that is a disservice to everything that he has put into this. Also, though, later on in a backstage segment, he was like, yeah, I lost again on the phone talking to somebody, and it did crack me up. I was like, oh, my God.
I want to see him turn heel, because the thing is, we've joked about it.
He's the worst babyface. He's the worst.
We've joked about it in the past. Like, you know, I don't know what happens when he goes into a room and says, here's what I'm thinking for my gear, because for like a year he was on an 80s Broadway musical. Now he's like cosplay Shawn Michaels. I don't understand what it is he's doing, because he's... You've said it, and it's kind of, it now is the theme of everything. He's not authentic in any way.
Yep.
I feel like I'm watching a guy trying to be Shawn Michaels. I don't feel like I'm watching Dolph Ziggler, you know?
I feel like I'm watching a guy trying to collect a paycheck and get out as fast as possible.
And I've been there.
Yeah, I think we all have.
Do you remember when you were there live to see Dolph Ziggler pin Seth Rollins?
Yeah, and I was there live to see Dolph Ziggler face CM Punk for the WWE title. And both times, he felt legit. He felt like somebody that you could put the company on the back of. And man, oh man, he should have walked away.
We got a segment with Vicky Guerrero. She came back. I had the fear of God that she, because Vicky Guerrero got to leave and shove Stephanie into a pool of mud and then do the Viva La Raza dance to Eddie's music, which was like the perfect.
It was brilliant. Goodbye. I loved that so much.
But my fear for her here was that she was going to come out and do her thing, and then Stephanie was going to come out, and it was just going to go downhill. But luckily, they actually managed to do what I thought was a pretty fun segment, where she came out, pitched herself as the GM of SmackDown Live, which is apparently what we're calling it. No, she wants to be the COO of SmackDown. And she ended up getting dragged away by security, which I thought was perfect.
I love Vicky Guerrero. I really do. I really do. I was watching the Hall of Fame deal not too long ago, at WrestleMania. Oh man, and man, oh man, just, I had tears in my eyes. I just love Vicky. I always found her very entertaining.
Well, and she went from being, and I don't mean this with any disrespect to anyone who's a big Eddie Guerrero fan, because I am as well. She was hired to give her some money and give her a paycheck, which is great. But she was a horrible television performer at the beginning. She was horrible. And it was kind of one of those things where you're like, oh God, like, I know that you want to give her some money, but just give her some money. Like, don't put her on TV. Like, this woman's not any good. And then I don't know what she did, but she just kind of overnight just became like, wait a minute, she's a great heel. And she got better, and she became a really great part of a kind of period of wrestling that people don't really talk about anymore. But she, you know, her stuff with Edge when they were married and all that sort of stuff was fantastic. It was she was one of my favorites.
I think she made Dolph Ziggler too.
She did, and I met her a couple of times at a couple of WrestleMania event things, and she is the loveliest woman. And, like, she's so nice, and she makes you feel like she's not just chatting to a fan and waiting to get to the next person. Like, she was lovely. And then eventually she kind of recognized me, like, for the fourth time, and she was like, are you stalking me? Another story. Another story. Viva La Kenny. So the Big Show was backstage giving a pep talk to America, because apparently the depths of hell is in America. Which,
yeah, well, I mean, you know, we are going to come, so.
Yeah, it's true. Then we got Goldust and R-Truth beat the Vaudevillains in 1:25.
This was just brutal to watch as a guy who likes the Vaudevillains. Oh, man. Like, you said that the Vaudevillains aren't really connecting with you too much, but they didn't deserve this, right?
No, not at all. They are still a level above Goldust and R-Truth and Breezango for me.
Yeah.
But then the difficulty is, what do you do with the Vaudevillains that's in between? It's not quite low down the card as Goldust, R-Truth, and Breezango, but it's not high enough to be the tag titles. There's got to be a middle area that.
Now, see, I thought a program between them and Big Cass and Enzo would have been good, considering the injury and everything, but. They kind of squandered that with throwaway matches on Raw and SmackDown and the whole nine yards. I would have saved that and had some angles and some promos and
I'm gonna be honest,
built that up to that.
I don't know why this comes into my head, but I would like to see the Vaudevillains with a valet.
Yeah, that could work.
Like a woman from that era as well, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but in my head. Like, do you remember when Ivory was in Right to Censor?
Yeah, definitely.
That kind of thing, you know, like.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see that. And maybe, I don't know, it would have to be someone that we haven't seen yet, because, like, whenever I picture that, I picture someone who looked like Mae Young back in the 40s. You know what I mean? Like a strong woman, that type of deal.
The problem is that Nikki Storm, who's in developmental, would be great for that. Act the way she looks and the way that she carries herself, but the problem is you can't do it with a Scottish accent. You just can't. Like, as much as I would love to sort of perpetuated that
show. Okay. Here it comes. This is what everybody wants to hear. Kenny, do your best American accent.
I can't do an American accent.
Oh, damn it!
I genuinely can't do one. I can say a couple of words in American.
Okay, try it.
So here it's called a hamburger, right?
Sure.
You guys call it a hamburger. We call it water. You call it water.
Water. Yeah, water. Look at that. Oh man, look at that.
I'm not overstepping.
You are a thespian.
Two words, mate. Two words.
Oh, my goodness.
Bob Backlund and Darren Young were back together again. It's time to make Darren Young great again. And he's going to give him the crossface chicken wing as a finisher.
I love that. You know what I love, though, as an idea? I think it would be great to have this to where they never get into the ring, and it's kind of just like the GTV segments from the Attitude Era, and it just carries on for like a year, and then just poof, it goes away.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm happy. I'm enjoying the vignettes. I think I'm in the minority, but I'm still enjoying them.
I'm with you. I love it. I hope it never ends. I hope it never gets into the ring.
I want a 60-minute DVD of this. With bloopers and vignettes. Anyway.
What do you mean you're gay? I don't know what that word means. Why are you so happy?
You're engaged to him, but that's a man. Yeah, Bob, but that's... like... But it doesn't work.
How do you have babies?
You can't put it in an out hole. That doesn't work. There's so much stuff.
There's so much material. There.
And the thing is, because somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody tweeted me or spoke to me about this, and kind of like, and I get it. They were like, you know, isn't it kind of offensive that Bob Backlund would be sort of like, you know, being anti-gay in a way? And I was like, but that's like.
I think there's a difference between like him going, no, that's wrong, and him not understanding.
Yeah, that's the joke is that he is out of touch and doesn't understand. He's not making fun of it.
Exactly. For that, it would be that he is just so far out of his element that he didn't even know that was plausible.
Oh, I just so wish it would happen.
It's just not even in the realm of possibilities for the conservative mind
can
of
you
Bob
imagine, Back. Can you imagine, right? Let's take this a further level, right?
Sure.
Darren Young wins his first match. So sure. When Darren Young wins his first match, he takes Bob Backlund out on the town to a drag bar.
Oh, yes!
People, just imagine what would happen. Like, a drag queen tries to, like, sing at him and he makes them do 10 push-ups. I mean, it would just be the best thing ever.
Oh, my goodness.
You could have, like, a drag version of Cher trying to sing Turn Back Time to him.
Oh, my God, this would be great.
Anyway,
oh, my goodness. By the way, if anyone has never been to any type of a drag show or anything like that, definitely go. You need to, at least once in your life.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
John Cena comes out. Then the club came out and they had some funny shtick, actually. I got a kick out of it. They talked about what their favorite pastime being beating up John Cena. Luke Gallows said that he's going to dress up at Halloween as Bushwhacker Luke and beat up John Cena. And they did various things like that, and then they ended up kind of coming down to fight Cena. We all knew somebody was going to come to Cena's aid. I had the fear that it was going to be the bloody Usos again, but thankfully, it was Enzo and Cass who came out. And I mean, this is big for those guys, like getting to work with Cena and being a 6-man tag with him. That's big.
I was going to say, this speaks a lot about how they're impressing people backstage, I'd say. I mean, they wouldn't just give this type of spot to anybody, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think the key thing is that they're by John Cena going with Enzo and Cass, it makes everything feel fresh again.
It does.
And that's what you want. You know, if you had put the Usos in there or the Dudleys, or anybody like that, it would have felt rehash, you know?
Yeah, it would have felt like old hat. And also, I do love heel AJ, And I love Carl Anderson. I just do. I love that he said that he was going to be with his kids and his hot Asian wife. I also love that his Twitter bio, it's just like, I have kids and a hot Asian wife. So I don't know. I love that. He's great. He's great. He's so likable. He's so charismatic. I'm just head over heels for him. I love it.
So we've got a 6-man tag coming up at Battleground with those 6 guys should be a barn burner, as Jim Ross would say. The shining star. I'm not even doing it. Becky Lynch took on Summer Rae in about 3 minutes, and Becky Lynch beat her. That was fine. But then we got one of my favorite segments of all time, where Chris Jericho was speaking to the multinational alliance. And they're all trying to, like, you know, get on the same page. And then at the end, Kevin Owens just says, look, I don't care. Just get on the same page. And he walks away. And then Chris Jericho walks up to Sami Zayn and says, you better watch it. And Sami Zayn's like, what's it? And Jericho just, like, gets in his face and just goes, it. And walks away. Again, so I'm going to reiterate it. Why do Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens not have their own ride-along show? It would be the best thing ever in character. God,
it would just be so good. It would just be so good. Jericho, he's just, oh man, he's so good. I love Jericho lately. And I think it makes it that much sweeter because Jericho, for a long time, we were making fun of him, you know, saying, oh, it's dad bod and everything else. He was so stale. And he just recognized it. And he was like, no, I need to turn the corner here quick. And then he did, just like that. Like, it didn't even, just effortlessly. Guy's just so good. One of the all-time greatest performers on the mic, in the ring. Just amazing. Such a good guy.
Yeah, for sure. Then we got a segment with the New Day and the Wyatts. The New Day are in the ring. The Wyatts are in their kind of jungle shed thing that they're all, that used to be in back in the day when they were trying to be scary. And Eric Rowan was talking about how, you know, laughter soothes everything. Braun Strowman was talking about how he loves the sound of screams. And they were basically creeping them out, and the Wyatts were inviting them to come and fight them. And to visit the Wyatts compound. And Big E and Kofi Kingston were well up for it, and they were enjoying it. And then Xavier Woods grabbed the mic and said, you know, I've had enough, you know, we wouldn't survive there, it's their yard, blah, 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 blah. And Xavier Woods said that he doesn't think, yeah, so he ends up by saying, I don't think the New Day would survive, and then he leaves, and leaves Kofi and Big E in the ring.
And Francesca.
And Francesca too.
Yes.
Here's the thing, I love the Wyatt stuff, I thought that was really good. I thought I think putting them back in their compound is a step up for them if they're going to be heels for a while. I don't think the Xavier thing worked completely, but I admire the attempt at trying to do something different with them, and I'm hopeful that other segments might kind of strike with the audience in the arena a little bit more.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is... Here's the thing. If I were Bray Wyatt, I would quit the WWE right now and become an actor. Because it's not that he's a bad wrestler. He's, you know, he's very adequate and, adequate to good in the ring. But as a character, he's just 10 out of 10, right? Just like the presence, just everything. Not the way he's booked, but the way that he is. He's a pure 10 out of 10. I don't think anyone would argue that. And man, oh man, he can act circles around anybody. Like, he's so captivating. And then you go from that to Xavier, and no offense to Xavier. He did a perfectly fine job in terms of bad wrestling acting, which, you know, I mean, let's be honest, that's what a lot of wrestling is. But it's so hard to go from Bray Wyatt, who could probably get nominated for some kind of award if he were to start acting, versus, you know, just your typical soap opera deal. You know what I mean? So, yeah, by comparison, kind of a striking comparison.
Yeah, and I commend that they tried, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it could be something fresh and different. It was nice to see the New Day do something different from their usual stick.
I would rather see them fail a little bit of doing something different than just continuing to do the same thing.
Yes, exactly. There you go. Good way to put it.
Michael Cole announced that this Thursday on SmackDown, they're going to announce Brock Lesnar's opponent for SummerSlam. Who do you think it is?
Mark Hunt.
Mark Hunt.
It better be somebody who matters. That's all I got to say.
There was a rumor today from somebody on Reddit that it's going to be Randy Orton.
Okay.
Here's the thing with the Randy Orton match. I think the Randy Orton Brock Lesnar match has the potential to be a big deal. But you need to get me to that point because I'm not there at the moment.
Well, I mean, Randy Orton hasn't been on TV in how long?
When did he go off TV?
I don't know, but it's a really bad sign that I haven't missed him.
Yeah.
That's rough.
He wasn't in the Rumble.
I feel like it's almost been a year. I know that's off, but probably 9 months? A pregnancy? Is he pregnant?
He very well could be. I remember him being on SummerSlam and fighting Sheamus last year, but that's the last thing I remember. So, I think the most likely thing is that Brock Lesnar faces the winner of the WWE Championship match at Battleground.
That would make sense. I just hope that there is still a streak for him to pass it on at SummerSlam.
Can you imagine if they just say one more time, Brock and the Undertaker? No.
Oh God, no! Could you imagine if they say one more time, Brock and Triple H? I think I'd rather take the Undertaker.
Oh God!
I'm tugging on my collar right now, you guys.
Main event time, and probably the least relevant main event I've ever seen. It was the Big Show, Apollo Crews, Zack Ryder, the Dudleys, Mark Henry, Jack Swagger, and Kane, Team America, against the multinational alliance of Cesaro, Alberto Del Rio, Sheamus, Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Sami Zayn, and the Lucha Dragons.
Your good friend, Kalisto. Oh,
God. Frick. what was he going to say? I thought this was fun, but it was just kind of forgettable. My favorite part of the whole thing, can you guess?
Ryder getting another nice moment on Raw?
No. Much better than that. Much better than that. Please tell me you picked up on this.
Kalisto getting squashed like a motherfucker?
Nope, still not that. The best part of this match was when Cesaro got in the ring with Jack Swagger. And they're about to do the We the People thing, and all you can hear from behind Cesaro's side is Chris Jericho going, "No! Don't do it! He's American!" And then Kevin Owens is going, "Stop it, you stupid person! He's American!"
And, oh my God. That's Owens great. I completely missed that.
Stole it. You need to, like, legitimately, you need to go back and watch that part of the match.
That is phenomenal. I wish I would have caught.
And Jericho's just like, "He's American!" Like, so loud.
So offended.
Yeah, he's like, what are you doing?
I really like this. I'm going to be the person that's absolutely in the minority. Maybe it's because I went in with zero fucking expectations, right?
Well, like, I liked it. I'm just saying, I don't know. It felt like, what's the best way to describe it? It felt like you were in school and like your teacher just went out of the room for 20 minutes. And you all just kind of like fucked about.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. The only thing I hated about it was the nonstop finishes and pinfall trading, where it's just like, I'm gonna run in, I'm completely hot, and I'm gonna hit my finish and pin this guy. Then that guy's gonna come in, and even though I'm still completely hot, I'm gonna take one finish, which I usually kick out of 9 times. And that's going to be the end of it. I'm just like, all right, you're taking me out of the moment right now. It just looks like you're trading pinfalls. Mark Henry got some jump on that pop-up powerbomb, though, didn't he?
He did. I thought impressive. they all did a pretty good job. I'm happy for Zack Ryder. He got the moment. If that's a way to kind of, you know, have him be a little bit stronger to be a mid-card player in one of the brands, then that's good.
Yes, yes, and I agree he should be. I think that whenever the draft takes place, I think that he should be on almost every show, and he should be about 500 instead of well under 500 on the win-loss column.
And the big show... Now, was it just me? See when they were doing the woo-woo-woo thing at the end? For a brief second, I thought, is Big Show about to turn on him? Like, I really thought that's what I was about to see. I was like, oh, no. Zach's getting his moment. He's getting his big cheesy grin, and you're going to do this to him.
I mean, with the Yay America thing, you couldn't have a heel turn right then.
No, you couldn't.
But the flag's there. Respect the flag, Kenny. It's an object and a person.
Oh, I forgot. You can't say anything bad about it.
Yeah. That flag, it's the best thing. You know, there are people, you know, you walk past starving children here in America who are homeless. We have a huge homeless child population here in America. But God damn it, if that flag touches the ground, I will light those homeless kids on fire.
America.
America.
What would you give this episode out of 10?
I would give this 7 pristine, untouched flags that have not touched the ground, and if that flag touches the ground, you have to burn it, but if you burn one that hasn't touched the ground, then you go to prison. So, yeah, 7 of those. 7 of the good flags, not the bad flags. Fuck those bad flags. 7 good flags. That's what I would give this episode.
For one of the first times in Raw React Rundown history, I'm going lower than you.
I believe that. I do believe that.
I'm going to go for a 6.
I honestly, I was thinking about a 6.5, but I said, no, I'm an American. This is my day. Oh, it's time to be patriotic. Let's kick it up a notch. Let's go to 7 on this.
There you go. Well, that is Monday Night Raw. Now, David and I will try to record a Raw Rundown next week. However, it will be quite difficult because I will be on tour with Paul Heyman at the time, but we will endeavor to get something sorted. David,
it's true, and also, I'll be in Cancun until I get back that Monday, so I'll be able to watch Raw, but I don't know if I'll have time to talk about it. We'll try to figure something out though.
What is your Twitter handle? One more time for the cheap seats in the back.
At ZOOPSOUL, and you can go and check out that picture of me as Lana. I got great tits in it. It's great.
And you can get me at KennyMC1985 as always. Thank you for listening. Our numbers for this podcast have gone up and up and up in the last month or two. We appreciate your support, whether you have been here from the beginning, whether you've come in from one of our interviews, whether you have come from What Culture, no matter where you are from, we love you all equally. And when we launch our VIP service that is a paid premium service, we will love the people that buy that just a little bit more. Thank you for listening. David, what have we done here?
I believe, now you can correct me if I get this wrong, but I do believe we have reacted to the events that have transpired on Monday Night Raw and run them down accordingly.
You can't get catchier than that, folks. Catchier.
No, that is the least mouthful that you will ever hear.
I'm not going there. Good night. We'll be right back.